It's time for the Matt and Jeff Radio Hour from PopDose.com and Addicted to Vinyl. Now, here are your hosts, Matt Wardlaw and Jeff Giles.
Ben, thanks for joining us for the latest episode of our little radio hour here. We knew we had to invite you on to the show to get a real interview out of you after the bogus one you did for the site, which was brilliant.
Thank you. Best interview I've ever had. Best interview questions by far.
I feel like I have to apologize because I did a Google search for Ben Arthur interview this morning, and I think that was the first one that came up.
Which just goes to show how much more people are interested in B. Arthur than they are in me. And that's as it should be, frankly.
And, you know, right off the top of things, Ben, I just want to dispel the rumors. We, of course, had the idea that we could do this podcast interviewing you as if you were Joseph Arthur, but that's not cool.
my van. I got my van back, and I'm so relieved to get my van back.
So we're gonna put all.
Have you followed that whole thing with Joseph?
No.
Yeah, that sucked.
His touring van got stolen, and he had a whole bunch of gear in there and paintings and stuff, and there was a big hubbub amongst his friends on Facebook, and he got the van back, amazingly enough.
Wasn't it kind of impounded? Didn't the city have something to do with
that? The city took it, and then somebody bought it from the city very quickly and then sold it back to Joseph for like five times the price he paid. But never mind, you know. Not like the most heartwarming story I've ever heard. But what do you do?
Do you have a story that'll top that one, Ben? Because that's a pretty good one.
No, I think we should stick with Joseph Arthur and B. Arthur.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Life on the road has been treating you better than that, I hope.
Yes, sometimes good, sometimes bad. There was actually a murder/suicide drug overdose at a hotel I stayed at recently in Burlington, Wisconsin. That was last week. Evidently, the people who were there weren't answering their door, and so the hotel came in and found a man with his head on the bed, blood everywhere, and a woman in a wedding dress, and a lot of drug gear. So when I pulled up the hotel, there was like four cop cars and three ambulances, and it was like, "Hey, I'm checking in. How you guys?" It was awkward.
I hope they upgraded you.
I don't. If they did, I didn't notice it. I mean, you know, I didn't die, so I considered it a win overall.
All the smart rock stars stay out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, totally. Well, watch out for Burlington. And Burlington is like, it's a tiny little town. It's like, you know, I don't know, 10,000 people or something. So it's like, hey, you people are crazy. I need to get back to the safety of New York City.
Well, yeah. Artistically, did you get a song out of it?
No, but honestly, like, I got creeped out in the middle of the night and started having visions of this like bloodied woman in a wedding dress. It was very Carrie, you know.
Yeah.
and this is embarrassing to admit, but I actually turned on the bathroom light and slept with the light on, which I don't think I've done since I was like 14.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Sorry, we keep interrupting each other.
Yeah, it goes with the territory. Until we can afford to put together a studio where everybody can sit around the same table.
Sure, you do that anyway.
Let's talk about this new record, which is, in a word...
Joseph Arthur has a new record out? That's awesome. I love him.
No, B. Arthur. B. Arthur has a new record out.
Wow.
She's doing disco songs, Ethel Merman style. She's
nice. Bringing it back from the grave.
Yes. I know the record is supposed to correspond with the book, but just approaching it on its own terms, it is it's definitely very eclectic.
Yes, it is very eclectic, which, you know, is something that I tend towards anyway, having sort of the book element gave me an excuse to go even, you know, crazier with that, more schizophrenic than usual.
Well, it's the kind of thing that I think you would have had to really struggle to get out in the old major label paradigm, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that was never a big issue for me. you know, the major labels, not so much worried about what I do. Luckily for me. that's probably true, but, you know, that's honestly one of the nice things about the new paradigm. You know, you don't have to be 16 years old. You don't necessarily have to show your midriff. Mine is not so good, by the way. you get to do what you want to do. And, you know, there's downsides to that too, I'm sure. But the upside is, you know, it really comes down to you making the kind of art you want to make, and not really worrying about anyone else. And that's definitely the way I approach it.
Do you have any kind of feel for kind of the percentage of fans and listeners who are experiencing this as the book music package, and how many people are just listening to the record?
You know, I don't have a clear sense. We definitely approached it with the idea that anyone who just, you know, stumbles into the book or is given it by a friend should be able to read it and not know anything about the record, and it should just be a book. And similarly, anyone who, you know, gets a copy of the record, you know, and doesn't know anything about it, doesn't know anything about the book, should be able to just listen to it like, you know, it's just a record. There are those people out there, I think, who are interested in the sort of integration thing, particularly the folks who are getting the ebook, which is, you know, you can actually sort of turn the pages and listen to the songs at the same time. There was a woman, yeah, Anna A, who, you know, because when we first started doing this project, me and my producer, Mike Creor, we didn't know that doing an ebook that was a single unified piece was even possible. Like there weren't, you know, the iPad hadn't come out yet. You know, the Kindle was out, but there wasn't any music playing capability. So it was only in the last year that you know, we started thinking about that. And luckily I ran into this woman, Anna A, from the UK, who I've never met, but who wanted to do the project with me and brought an incredible amount of design ingenuity. All of, I don't know whether you happen to have seen the ebook, but there's a lot of illustrations at the beginnings of chapters and around the songs. That's all stuff that she did on her own, which it was really cool. It was a really fun collaboration and weird. Like, I've never done an ebook with songs in it before, needless to say. So it was strange.
Most people haven't.
Yeah, right. So it was strange trying to think about, you know, do this, because there are songs on the record that are, you know, sort of songs that show up in the narrative. You know, mostly those are sung by other people, Aesop Rock, Rachel Yamagata, Bobby St. Hours. Because, you know, obviously I couldn't write about myself. Ah, oh, that Ben Arthur, that B. Arthur, she's so wonderful. So I sort of was able to hide behind them. But whether those songs that appear in the narrative were like at the beginning of chapters, or whether they were like right in the middle, like where the song is actually mentioned, and how to integrate and how much, you know, because there are songs that are sort of more loosely tied to the narrative, you know, like So Far and Holy Night, that are sort of thematically engaged with some of the issues that are in there, but they aren't like in the book themselves. How to sort of place those within the actual, you know, e-document. So anyway, all of which is to say, you know, I had a lot of help from a lot of extraordinary people, including this ebook designer who just sort of, we just ran into each other, essentially.
And that's what I was going to ask was as far as the guest appearances, how early they worked themselves into the idea equation, because like the track with Bobby St. Hours, that's a pretty interesting side trip from, you know, the rest of what we hear from you on the record.
Yeah, which I, you know, appeals to me. Like I said, you know, I tend to have that sort of schizophrenic thing with songs anyway. You know, for me, I feel compelled to put the best songs I've written on any given record. You know, whether they sort of gel, you know, I guess is up to the listener. But at the end of the day, I feel like I have to serve those songs most. This, you know, project, of course, was even more complicated than that, because the songs, you know, not only had to be the best ones I've written, but the ones that sort of fit with the narrative. And the two pieces, the music and the book, really sort of shaped each other. It's like a long-term relationship where, you know, the person you become is based on the person on your company, like who you're next to, and the book and the album are like that. So with that particular song, that was actually a pretty early in the process song. I knew I wanted that, and the, you know, the Where I Belong is of course about this doctor character, sort of who's cheating on his wife in the book. And I knew I didn't feel like I was going to be able to do that vocal the way I heard it. And this guy, Bobby St. Hours, who I grew up with, he was in the Hackensaw Boys, which is a great band down from Virginia. You know, I knew I wanted him on there. Rachel was later in the process, Rachel Yamagata, but still in the middle. Ace, his track, I didn't know Ace was going to be a part of this until literally the last month. Like, we got Ace's track, I think a week and a half before I had to deliver to the label, which is funny because a lot of people assume it was like, oh, well, you know, you figured out which hip hop guy would be willing to be on your record, and then you wrote that person into the book, and it couldn't be further from the truth. Like, this character Evan is kind of obsessed with Ace's music, a white kid who's a, you know, big hip hop fan, and I had written, you know, Ace into the book. You know, I've been a fan for a long time, years ago, like 4 years ago. And it was really, you know, the last minute. My friend Wiz was working with me on the track, and he left a verse empty. And I called him. I was like, "Yo, is that because you think you can get Ace to do this?" And he said, "Yeah, I mean, let's give it a shot." And amazingly, you know, a week and a half later, we had this great track from Aesop Rock, which, you know, was a thrill for me, not only because I'm a fan, but because it really makes the sort of idea of the book and the album working together gel a lot more clearly.
The reason I wanted to know if you were aware of the sort of breakdown in the audience as far as who's buying all the formats or just some of the formats is that the record, if you just listen to the record by itself, it kind of asks you to take a leap of faith and follow you on a sonic trip, sort of. And a lot of records don't do that these days. They're a little more eager to
please.
Eager to please. I mean, not that this record isn't pleasing, but it isn't like a, you know, it isn't humping your leg like
it's
a puppy.
It's just terrible.
It trusts you to,
from start to finish.
It trusts you to hang in there.
No, I know exactly
and
what
I can
you
see
mean.
That somebody would hear, like, and possibly, you know, and then hear the rest of the record after that and wonder what's going on. And so I wondered if people had talked to you about that.
You mean as far as on the industry side of things?
Who cares about those people?
Or you mean the fans who I'm engaging with out there in the world?
Yeah. The fans.
The latter. I mean, I guess from my perspective, as I say, I totally know what you mean. From my perspective, art should get you a little bit off balance. There's nothing I like less than putting in a record and feeling like, you know, it just disappears into a mush of, yeah, that song sounds a lot like the one I heard 2 seconds ago. I want something, and this is not just music, this is any kind of art. I want something that gets me a little bit off balance, gets me a little bit sort of unsure, and maybe changes the way I'm approaching not just the art, but maybe, you know, the way I see the world. You know, my favorite experience with stuff like that is to, like, go to a museum and see something interesting, or see a movie or hear a great record, that then when I walk out into the world, my viewpoint of the world shifts a little bit, and I start seeing art or beauty or ugliness where I didn't see it before. So I feel like that's kind of like my job, to some extent. And you know, if I would really truly rather have some of the listeners go, you know what, not my bag. I don't really dig this. It's you know, it is too schizophrenic for me. Than have listeners not feel at all interested.
Right. Yeah, no, I'd rather
lose some of the people who might, you know, take a look by being too interesting than by being too boring.
Yeah. I think you accurately describe the function of the artist and of art. There's something really brave about doing a project like
Thanks.
This at this moment in time. There are a lot of artists that are kind of backing off the idea of even releasing CDs at all.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
You're doubling down.
Yeah. Well, maybe, although I think you could also argue, you know, by playing with the ebook and doing sort of this integrated thing, you know, maybe I'm trying to do something a little new and new tech as well. So I'm not sure if I get full credit, but I appreciate the compliment just the same.
Well, it's big and it's ambitious, and you're offering a whole lot of content at a time when a lot of artists find that it's easier and cheaper just to, I don't know, put out a digital EP or whatever, not trust the audience to hold up their end of the bargain, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, you can't ask a lot these days, can you? I mean, it was an interesting question, you know. So when we realized that we were going to pull off the ebook thing and it was going to include the entire album in the ebook, you know, the question of pricing came up, and a lot of people said, well, you know, you really should price your book at under $5 for the digital version. We ended up feeling like, well, it's not just a book, it's also an album. And I thought about doing a couple of different versions, and, you know, here's just the book, here's, you know, the book with the songs, here's the book with the songs and a separate download, and ended up feeling like I just confuse people and irritate them more than, you know, meet them at the price point they want.
Well, can we have you play a song?
Sure, absolutely. I'm going to move this microphone a little bit so it catches some of the guitar. Which is why all the thumping. Sorry. Yeah. That's some of the bass in your face that I'm bringing. All right. Give me 2 seconds. All right. There we go. Let me pick up the guitar, see whether it's in tune. Responded to the email because the spammer's name resembled yours. Imagine my surprise on the screen before my eyes. It turned out that the note was from you. Why you feel compelled to do this? In the form of a phishing scam. Below my mother's maiden name are my account numbers too. You know I'll cash any check for you. Oh, holy night. You that day outside the bar, saying you'd been robbed and only needed $80 to get home to your ailing mom. You followed me to the ATM, carefully took my address, and you swore up and down as soon as you got back to town you'd send me a check for this and more.
Oh, oh, holy night. Holy. Oh, oh, holy night. Holy. My friends always said I would live to regret. I would live to regret trusting you. I should not have opened the prospectus. That much is clear by now. But the returns that you promised were well above the markets. I invested everything I have in you. I invested everything I have in you. I invested everything I have in you.
I wanted to talk a little about the business of being a full-time musician in 2012. Well, one of the things that's interesting to me about your career is that I think you're doing two web series about writing and recording songs. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And each one approaches that whole process from a different angle. From what I've read anyway, one of them is more about the technical aspect of things. The other one is
Songcraft. On Mac Pro Video is about sort of, you know, how you get a great, you know, kick drum sound and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's more sort of, you know, for music geeks, producing, you know, that sort of thing. But then Dubway Days is sort of the front end where it's more sort of, you know, what it's like. I mean, one of the funny things about what we do out there in the world is, you know, what we're really obsessed with is songwriting. You know, what we really care about is song writing, but what we end up focusing on is performance. You know, the reality is if we really cared about performance as much as we, you know, seem to from what we spend our time on, we'd all be fans of, you know, I don't know, Bob Dylan cover bands. but that's not what we care about. We care about the actual, you know, art that the artists are making, the songs that can, you know, grab you and yank you back 20 years when you were, you know, a kid and first heard the song, or, you know, can change the way you actually see, you know, the world in front of you. But the reality is we don't spend a lot of time on what that looks like and how these extraordinary artists do what it is they do. So, and it's actually been really, I mean, fascinating for me, just as a songwriter, never mind as, you know, being a part of the show, but to get in the room with John Wesley Harding and see what it is that he thinks about when he's sitting down with the guitar across his lap, or Ola Bell, who I'm a huge fan of, or Jimena Sarañana, City on a Lake, Vienna Tang. We've had some really extraordinary artists in, and sort of getting a chance to sit across from them and you know, work on a song and see how they get where they get has been really, really gratifying for me personally.
What you're doing, I think, with these is really instructive at a time when that stuff is needed, because fewer artists have the luxury to devote this level of time to the craft. And I think a lot of artists have a misconception about craft. You know, they think it's all supposed to be just the flash of inspiration.
Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, rock and roll sells a lot of lies. You know, that's kind of what it does. That's kind of its role. But, you know, the reality is the majority of bands out there, you know, working or breaking through, you know, come from wealthy families. You know, that's something else that you don't hear in a lot of bios.
Right.
I was talking with Rob Reinhart, who does Acoustic Cafe, about this just the other day. you know, all the bios are like, oh yeah, man, we threw our songs up on MySpace and it just went crazy, man. And that's just not true. It takes a lot of money and it takes a lot of team. And then we sell this BS story to the public about what the act of doing this looks like. And you know, it's, I don't know. We're not doing the kids any favors, that's for sure. And I don't think it's necessary, honestly, from my perspective. It takes a lot of hard work, but it beats the crap out of, you know, as we used to say back in Harrisonburg, where I'm from, it beats the crap out of cutting assholes out of chickens. that was the colorful local phrase. There was a poultry plant just down the road. So it beats cutting assholes out of chickens. You know, I'm glad to be able to do it, but it's definitely, you know, it's not what MTV, you know, portrays, you know, lifestyles of the rich and, you know, shallow.
How do you strike a balance between the art and the business of what you do?
I do the art as well as I can, and I do the business very poorly. would I think be accurate? I mean, I'm joking in some ways, but you know, so I played a show in Minneapolis, 4 days ago? And after the show, I had multiple people come up to me and say, oh, you know, I want the album. How much is the album? And I said, $10. And the book is $10. And I've had, you know, three people that night say, that's too little. And try to put more money in my hand. And What I was thinking about, you know, as I was leaving was, I didn't get in this to be a salesman. Like, if I wanted to be a salesman, I would be a salesman and I would sell something that people want more than they want my records or my books, too. You know, I got into the game because I wanted to share my work and because I wanted to make the work. So is it any surprise that I'm not, you know, so another example, I was having drinks with a musician friend of mine in Madison, Wisconsin, two nights before that. And we were talking about USB drives because we're both selling USB drives with records on them at our shows. And I said, how much do you sell yours for? And he said, $20. I was like, ah, right. Perfect. Yes, that's exactly what I'm selling mine for. It seems like, you know, about the right price. And I said, and you put all your records on there? And he was like, no, no, no. I just put my new record on there. I was like, oh, because I've been putting six albums and the ebook on there. Which is to say, I suck at this in some ways, particularly the business side. But that's not why I got into the game, you know? So whatever, you know, I feel like hopefully I'm starting to build a team around me of people who are savvier than I am about the elements of this that I'm not so savvy at. And they can, you know, kind of keep me from being as stupid as I often am. But it is a balance.
Do you regularly write or do you just wait for it to happen? I mean, are you out there punching in most days?
I wish I was. No, I would like to be that guy. And I am sometimes, depending on where I am in a given project, that guy. But it, you know, you sort of go through these cycles of creation and touring and promo, and the two don't necessarily help each other very much. In fact, they kind of actively hate each other. Right. So right now I'm kind of doing the touring and the playing out and organizational stuff. I will hopefully get back into the writing thing. I miss it. I find, you know, getting some exercise, doing something creative, having sex. Most days I'm happy if I can get those three things done.
I read you said that this whole project took you 3 years to finish. There must have been some creative humps that you had to get over.
There was a lot of humping. No, I'm sorry. You're talking about the creative.
Yeah.
I think it's actually fairer to say 5 or 6 years. As far as, you know, from start to finish. Yeah, there was a lot of problems. But, you know, the art doesn't take as long as the business, as the, you know, getting distribution in place and promo and booking and, you know, that side of it. So, yeah, it was never a big problem. When we needed to deliver, we delivered, and we were pretty much ready. Financing and you know, the team aspect of it is a lot harder than the art. The art is fun.
All right, Ben. Well, hey, this has been a lot of fun, but we should probably let you get going. How about we wrap up with another song?
Hells yeah. Well, before I do so, it's been a real pleasure talking to you guys. Thanks for taking the time.
So scary, the word so pure. I worried that I would fall short. Wasn't I just that sort? You never know. Always. It's such a long time, but I know I can. Say so far, I wanna spend my last day with you. So far, I want all the days before that too. All of my life, I've waited for something, hesitating, wanting for certain to know I was right. To say forever, to join two lives together. You never know. Always. It's such a long time, but I know I can say.